Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, the Seattle Mariners did not win against the Oakland A's, but they still got a series win, right? Which was a nice change from getting swept by the Tigers and, in really bad form, the Padres. Jake, have you been seeing enough that made you excited of, hey, they're making not a turn, but at least improving, and that's what I needed to see?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when you look at Ty France and you see him back in the lineup, you see him hitting, I think that that part of it brings you confidence, and it brings the idea of, okay, well, now you've got another major league bat at least in the lineup where you feel like anything can happen at any given moment. A good thing, not just what, okay, this is an automatic out. I think that is certainly positive. And you also saw moments where Jared Kelnick was able to hit with consistency. Yet last night he was 0-for-5, but overall in the series he played very, very well, made some impactful hits, made some impactful plays, and I think that that's critical when you talk about the long term future of this team. Kyle Lewis as well. So I definitely saw things that were very positive, and it's just another reminder, Stacy, that this season is going to just continue to be a roller coaster. And for Mariners fans, it's going to be very frustrating in the moment when you see these games and you see them go through a six-game losing streak and they're barely able to put together a major league roster out there because other people are hurting. And then there's also the other side of it where you see these young guys make their adjustments and they're able to have bright moments and flashes, and you need to ride those and enjoy the moment and see how they're progressing. So it's really going to be back and forth all season long, Stacy, from days that we feel like we want to pull our hair out to the moments where we're like, yes, we see it. It's coming together, you know?
Well, and the moments when you want to think like, yes, it's coming together are a moment like the other night when both Lewis and Kelnick had great days, right? You want to see the pieces specifically that you're looking at as being cornerstones of your team moving forward as being the ones that are excelling. Like, it would be great if Walton had a great night. It would be fantastic if Duggar on the mound filling in for a starter during a bullpen night had a wonderful day. But that's just kind of like a okay, great, but moment, because what you want to see is, okay, great, but how was Ty France? Okay, great, but how was Jared Kelnick? Okay, great, but how was Logan Gilbert? Those are the pieces you want to see improve. And you're not going to see their best right now, but the hope is that you start seeing their, not their best, but you start seeing improvement toward September.
Yeah, absolutely. That to me is the biggest equation in all of this as you're moving and progressing forward. Not to mention that those wins were against the A's, and those were quality wins for your team. I mean, those are nothing to scoff at or to look past. I mean, those were big moments, and I think that that is something that you look at this team, despite everything that they've been going through. That's why you hear Jerry DePoto on with Danny and Gallant, Stacy, say that, hey, this team is gritty, and I'm proud of them for overcoming a lot. And as they're going through these learning curves, that they're doing it and finding ways to still win ball games. I mean, that is incredibly encouraging when you talk about this team and you talk about the way that they are going to go through the year. It's not a guarantee that they will be around 500, but the fact that they've been able to stay relatively close to that, and hopefully they're able to remain competitive all the way through to the end of the season, I think is very, very exciting. And I agree with Jerry DePoto. It's a good sign that they're able to still be competitive and win despite, you know, so much.
Well, and what I want to be able to get to is someone who not just talks about the Mariners, but is someone who, we're all in a community of people who, you're Mariners fans, and you're Mariners fans because you also love baseball and you love winning because you're a sports fan. And one of the things I want to be able to get to is, hey, they have a series coming up here, a four-game series against the Texas Rangers. you got to split that. Or you know what I mean? Like, I would love to get to a point right. where you're talking about, all right, you're second, you're 1.5 behind. What do you need to get to first? Like, where you're tracking that regularly, and it's May and it's June, and it's not just, oh, I'd love to see Logan Gilbert look great. I'd love to see him stick through five in August and September. I want to move past that conversation. I know that's where they are right now, and I respect it and understand it. I want to be able to get to a point where you're looking at the series that you're having right now as a Mariners fan, and I know we're still doing this, saying, oh, I'd love to see them split that. I'd love to see them win. But you're thinking, all right, where's the math of the standings right now on a day-to-day basis?
Right. Yeah, that's crucial. And also what you want to see this team do is, as we said before, they're going to have their lumps. I mean, we looked at the series against the Detroit Tigers and said, oh, yeah, that's a great opportunity for them to win. And then they go in and lose every game. So those are situations that you hate to see. And you want to see them capitalize on every opportunity that they have to win games against lower quality opponents. You want to think that your roster is gaining momentum and is building momentum to the point where they are not towards the bottom tier of Major League Baseball, that they are, you know, working themselves up along in the right direction. And I think overall, when you look at the Mariners, I believe they have the chance to do that. But these are series, when you talk about the Rangers, the opportunities against the Detroit Tigers, you want to see them handle business.
Yeah. What would you, curious, and DJ, I'll include you here. We were talking with Logan Gilbert about Logan Gilbert with Mike when we had him on at 11:30, and it feels too early to say, yeah, you got to do this with Logan Gilbert because you're still trying him out, and he's really not sticking in games too long. What's your move there if he doesn't improve? Like, how long do you wait when it's someone you hope to be a starting pitcher and someone who is a starting part of your rotation? How long do you wait to send him back down? Do you give him more time because you don't have much at stake this year? It's not like you're competing for first.
Sorry, Jake. I don't know. That's weird. He's only 24. Is he really playing that bad? Like, honestly, like, do you guys actually think he's playing that bad?
Well,
like,
no, I don't think he's playing that bad. I mean, when you look at the situation, I mean, given the fact of the starts that he has had, the circumstances in which he was called up, what do you expect from him? Right? I mean, it would be awesome if he was dominating and he had his stuff all figured out, but that's also not realistic in this situation. How can he improve? What are the little things that he can do to get better at the major league level, still build confidence, still develop his pitches? You know, Jerry DePoto also pointed out the fact that Logan Gilbert started using his changeup, and how that was an exciting development for the Mariners to see him use that changeup, for him to be able to have success with the changeup, and how that can help him build confidence moving forward and developing that pitch. I think that when you look at him overall, unless you feel like he is just completely overmatched and he is not developing or not going to be able to develop at the right stage at the right level, then I think that's when you put him back down. And I think that Logan Gilbert, it's fine if that ends up happening. It's not an indictment on his overall future, but I think it's just a little too early to be worrying about that right this second.
Yeah, I think part of what it is, at least it sounds like from what Mike has said, is that he didn't see anything that he felt like, oh, okay, this kid can be special. And when a lot of your, I guess, experience as a fan and your hope as a fan and what's kind of keeping you hanging on here after two decades of missing the playoffs is hoping that you have something special, you want to be able to see it, right? It's why a home run from Kelnick almost like means more than a home run from a lot of other guys, because you want to feel like, oh, we found it, right?
Right.
And so
yeah.
I think people are waiting for that moment from Gilbert.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, I think that part of it is critical. And you want to see Gilbert quickly be a fast study, right? You want to see him being able to use his off-speed stuff and be able to fool batters and to be able to get the whiff rate at a high level. You want to be able to see his fastball have great location and be able to blow by the batters that step into the box. We haven't quite seen that level of dominance that Logan Gilbert has the potential to be, and what we have heard him talking about when it comes to him playing at the minor league level. And Logan Gilbert, in his first start, the first thing that he said post game after his start was, hey, I'm learning really, really fast right now, and I'm also learning that, hey, these guys are going to take advantage more of the mistakes that I leave out there on the plate than at the minor league level. And hopefully that is something that is is a building moment for him that he can use in a positive direction rather than looking at it and saying, oh my gosh, I'm not good enough. My stuff's not good enough. I make too many mistakes. I think that is another part of the equation as you're looking towards Logan Gilbert, but I would give it at least another two starts before you really start evaluating whether he needs to remain at the big league level or start thinking about him going back to AAA.
Well, and I know that the health of the current rotation is a big part of that. Like, let's be real. If you had Paxton still and you had the rest of your starters out there, you probably not only wouldn't have seen Gilbert, but if he would have been brought up, you wouldn't hesitate with being like, let's send him back down for just a little bit longer and then bring him back up. But right now you're kind of like, well, I mean, do we go with Gilbert who has a learning curve or do we go with a bullpen day? So not too much of a hard choice since you're going to need Gilbert anyways. Might as well get him out there. Let's jump to some NFL headlines. So I have some news here. This from Diana Russini. The Atlanta Falcons do have an offer of a first-round pick for Julio Jones. The Tennessee Titans, though, are, quote, a long shot to get him. So what does that mean? Don't forget that there are only a handful of teams in the NFL right now that have the cap space to absorb Julio Jones's $15.3 million guaranteed base salary. You know who one of those teams are? That's right. It's the San Francisco 49ers. So no idea yet on who would have offered that. I'm going to guess it's not the 49ers with that first-round pick. They traded two of theirs away, plus this year's, in that deal to move up to number three overall. So if it's a first-round pick for 2022 or 2023, 49ers, not that team. But if this is a first-round pick for, you know, the future, I don't even know if you could trade a 2024 right now. I know there's a limit. I don't know if it's 4 or 5 years, but I'm going to guess it's not the 49ers in this case, but I wouldn't still rule out Julio potentially landing there until we hear otherwise.
Well, absolutely. I think the 49ers make a ton of sense when you look at the overall equation for the 49ers. There's great history with Kyle Shanahan being Julio Jones' offensive coordinator in Atlanta. He knows him very, very intimately and knows how to get the best out of him, the most production out of him. And you're looking at an overall receiver group that I think has enough talent and depth where you necessarily don't need Julio Jones to be your number one receiver clear cut. He can be a part of a group that is dynamic, can make plays, but Julio Jones just takes them to another level. So I think the 49ers are going to be in this all the way to the end. Don't be surprised if you hear the Rams involved in this as well. I mean, we've already seen the Rams and Sean McVay make a ton of moves that indicate that they are all in right now. They don't care about anything else. I wouldn't be surprised to see them try and find some way, somehow, to get involved in the Julio Jones sweepstakes. But with his cap hit being as big as it is, Stacey, it's really hard to see a major, major market for him. And it's probably going to be with a team that has a lesser cap number and they're able to absorb that. Yeah, exactly. So I think that is more likely what you're going to see.
I think it would be really tempting for Sean McVay, but the Rams are in a really similar spot to Seattle. I mean, literally, they don't have a first-round pick. Don't forget that trade with Stafford that they gave up a pair of first-rounders for, and Jared Goff. Very important that you mention him. Very valuable weapon there. And they also have roughly the same amount of cap space, around $7 million. So if you look at Seattle's odds, they're like roughly the same as L.A. in terms of like what they have to trade, the cap space they have, and as well as the need. They'd love to get someone additionally for their quarterback. So I think you don't want to take, if it's a team like Miami or one of those teams, Miami might have more first rounders than anyone right now, but if it's a team like Miami that has a ton of first rounders and just, you know, they're like, why not? Let's do this. Let's try to take the division over, especially with the Patriots faltering. I can see something like that, but I'm kind of putting on my tin hat, and I'm going with Christian on the Mac and Jack's text line right now that says, wait a minute. He's almost 33 years old. He's too injured. No one's given the Dirty Birds a first rounder. If Atlanta was getting a first rounder, that trade would have been done already. He is calling shenanigans on it, not buying it. And you know what, Christian? I think I'm on board. I think I'm like, this sounds a little bit like working your market and saying, hey, by the way, you guys, we do have a buyer. We're not selling it yet, but we have one. So if anyone else has maybe two first rounders they want to offer, we'll consider it. Speaking of the Dolphins, right, Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa says he has a better handle of the playbook in year two. Quote, I didn't actually know the playbook necessarily really, really good. And that's no one else's fault but my own. Our play calls were simple when I was in. I didn't have alerts and checks. Where now I feel comfortable and I can maneuver my way through these things. Jake, I want to talk about whether Tua is a franchise quarterback, but I also want to be able to ask, is it weird for a quarterback to still be learning this? Because how many times have we heard things like Goff was told for years kind of about plays and stuff from Sean McVay? It doesn't seem, I guess what I mean to say is, it doesn't seem weird to have a learning curve with how much control or understanding you have of the playbook and the offense as a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, it's not a surprise. It's just not encouraging to hear that. And the reason why I would say that is because you're looking across the league at other rookie quarterbacks, and they seem to find a way to have a better handle on the playbook and have more success, therefore. And it makes sense. I mean, a lot of the plays that when Tua Tagovailoa was in the game, he was not operating an offense that I felt really either accentuated his strengths or gave him a lot of options. And it's because his mind was limited in terms of his ability to understand the playbook. So what do you do as an offense coordinator? You try and keep things really, really simple and dumbed down, and that also puts you in bad situations. So I think that with Tua, if he really truly wants to be considered the franchise quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, he has to show this year that he is all in on the playbook. He knows exactly what he's doing. He has great command of everything around him, and that this team is not limited because of Tua. That cannot be the case. That cannot be the case when he was drafted as high as he was. And this Dolphins team has all the looks of being a legitimate playoff type of caliber of team. Your quarterback needs to be an asset, not something that's hindering you.
And here's the thing about what the Dolphins and GM Chris Greer have done that's really smart. They both publicly seem to commit to Tua by not taking a quarterback and trading down from three with the 49ers, but they also accrued so many first-round picks that if Tua doesn't work out this year, yeah, not a problem. They're able to take someone next year and even trade up as high as they want with the number of picks that they have. I mean, I don't know if they'll get to one overall with whatever team's going to be in there, but they still racked up a ton of future early round picks to be able to change their mind on Tua if they decide to do that. All right, next story here. The NFL's number one deep passer, Daniel Jones, is up to the challenge to make the Giants' offense explosive.
Stop
it's on
it.
All of this. Daniel Jones says it's on 11 guys to do their job every day. They've added Kenny Golladay, Kyle Rudolph, John Ross, and rookie Kadarius Toney to an offense that already included Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, and Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley obviously coming back healthier off of that ACL, which, you know, like, look, there's no silver lining to an ACL, but if there is one, it's that he injured it earlier and seemingly is going to be ready to get back on time. Our question, same with Tua, is Daniel Jones the right quarterback for the Giants? I'm going to start with saying that I'd have wavering faith in Daniel Jones and his sweater vest to get the job done in New York.
I don't think I have that same level of faith in Daniel Jones, but he's got all the talent around him. He's got the tools around him in order to be successful. The question, what it comes down to, is offensive line play. It's great that you could have all these skill guys. Do you have the protection up front that allows you to play at a high level and allows you to distribute the football to these individual players? That's going to be key. The other key is also Daniel Jones. Can he limit the turnovers? Can he limit the fumbles and the interceptions? That's another thing that will help them as the Giants take the next step. I actually really like what they did in year one. I was very impressed by Joe Judge and the culture that he was able to establish. I didn't think it was going to work out. It still remains to be seen, ultimately, what Joe Judge it becomes as a head coach with the Giants, but I think he's off to a great start. And if it can all come together, Daniel Jones is a unique quarterback with his ability to run and throw. So I think they are definitely a team to look out for, but I don't have as great a confidence in Daniel Jones as you are, as you do, Stacey.
Oh, I have wavering. It's not that I have confidence.
I thought you said unwavering. I thought you were firm and steadfast.
Very much wavering.
Okay.
It's like a little tiny flag in the wind going back and forth, looking like it's about to tear off. More of what it is just kind of assuming that the Giants are going to be comfortable having a quarterback that isn't elite but can kind of help get them there when he has elite talent around him. a la Eli Manning, which they were able to get to and win two Super Bowls.
Yes,
so,
they were, and they look exactly like, have the same mannerisms.
It's eerie. It is
very eerie. So maybe you can't count Daniel Jones out, but right now I just don't think he is an it factor level quarterback.
All right, Stephon Diggs says he wants to win 5 Super Bowl rings. And look, let me say this about Stephon Diggs. He was the best wide receiver in the league last year. DK Metcalf would beg to differ. DeAndre Hopkins would beg to differ. Davante Adams is going to be in there saying, excuse me, I had 18 touchdowns. But guess what? No one had more receptions. No one had more targets. And no individual quarterback or offense leaned more heavily on their number one wide receiver than the Bills did with Diggs. So whether or not he's going to get those rings, he has certainly been one of the biggest improvements they made this season and one of the biggest reasons that offense and that team was able to get as far as they did.
You're absolutely right in terms of his impact on the Buffalo Bills, but this is what I'm going to say to Stephon Diggs. This is excellent offseason talk, but the reality is go win your first. Like, let's worry about 5 later. Let's go win the first one. How about that? This sounds like LeBron James, not 4, not 5, not 6. I mean, come on. 5 Super Bowls? You know how hard it is to win 5 Super Bowls in your career? You haven't even gotten to 1, right?
Yeah, but he's...
So, I don't really... I love the ambition and I love it, but in terms of the mindset and the goals, but in reality, this is just another great offseason talking point for Stephon Diggs and a lot of teams. There's all sorts of optimism in every single offseason.
Yeah.
How about you go focus on winning the first one?
Yes, agree with you on that one. What I'll say just as a final thought about a receiver saying this or anyone who isn't a quarterback, it would be frustrating, and this isn't a knock on Josh Allen, who was fantastic last year, it would be frustrating to be like, I have this individual goal to be the best I can be, but if I want to be the best I can possibly be, I also need a great quarterback. And it would be frustrating to know that when you want 5 Super Bowl rings, that is less in your control than it is in the quarterback's hands, when literally the ball is in his hands to start pretty much every play. So I always feel for like really great defenders or really great wide receivers or running backs that are either in bad offenses, which the Bills are not, or defenses, or are on teams with struggling quarterbacks. Like the stars that like Chicago has had and they haven't been able to capitalize on them, or Detroit has had, you just think, oh, if only you had a great quarterback there, you could have had a phenomenal kind of capstone to your great career, as in getting to a Super Bowl. It's got to be frustrating. All right. Coming up next, are the 49ers the Super Bowl team if they land this huge trade piece? Plus, what is the best rivalry in sports right now that's coming your way in the hype train?
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Look, we're going to be doing Hype Train here. It's one of my favorite games that we play normally every Wednesday. We didn't have a long enough show yesterday to do this because of the Mariners. But before we get to this, I have to tell you something. In our last segment, if you were able to listen to it, one of the things we talked about in our NFL headlines was Stephon Diggs wanting to win 5 Super Bowls in his career. Fantastic goal. Every player should want to do that and more. Now, Jake Heaps is someone who is always professional. He doesn't swear, really. He doesn't use foul language or anything. I don't know why. When he said this, I started getting real nervous and looked at DJ wanting to hover over that dumb button just in case.
But the reality is, go win your first.
My heart stopped. Jake, when you did this, I was like, the reality is, go. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. DJ, please get ready to dump this sound. This is going to get us in big trouble.
It's like, forget your aspirations.
Why?
I
know.
You?
Oh, you want to win 5 Super Bowls? Well, the reality is, go try that out. Play one more time, DJ. Play one more time.
But the reality is, go win your first.
My heart stopped, dude. My heart stopped.
That would be some
very
man,
out
that
of
would
character,
be
but also
very out of character
funny.
And also very savage. I mean, yeah, that would be some very aggressive conversation. But Stacey, you know what? I mean, you just never know. You never know when I'm going to let it rip.
Oh, God. It was just, yeah, that was bad boy Jake. The same Jake that had leather sleeves on your jacket that one time and also got suspended for trying to reprint a parking pass when you were in high school. That's a bad boy Jake move. It was just a...
I'm just trying to get my rep back up, Stacey.
Exactly. That's what it is. All right. Let's jump into Hype Train. Head down to the station. All right. The Falcons claim that they have a first round offer for Julio Jones, who most certainly is getting traded out of Atlanta sometime soon. So we don't know if it's going to be the 49ers, but if it is, the 49ers become a Super Bowl team with Julio Jones. You boarding that hype train or not?
Oh man, look, Julio Jones is a player that I think is still has the ability to be impactful. He's 32 years old. He came off an injury-ridden season. There is a lot to worry about when it comes to Julio Jones and his overall health. But if he's healthy and he is a guy that can come back and play not necessarily true to his original form, but he can play close to it, yeah, I think that this absolutely makes the 49ers a Super Bowl caliber team. I'm boarding this hype train.
All right. One aboard. DJ, the 49ers become a Super Bowl team with Julio Jones. You boarding?
I'm not boarding because I already think they're a Super Bowl team.
Oh, twist.
I already think they are. I really like their front seven with Bosa and Armstead. Fred Warner is probably the best middle linebacker
in
the
NFL. You can just say he is.
Yeah, he is. Just do it. And I mean, I know that Jimmy Garoppolo has his limitations, but he has a lot of weapons in Ayuk. Debo Samuel, who's just so physical. George Kittle.
Brandon Ayuk could be really great this year, too, in takeoff.
Any running back can rush for 100 yards in that offense, it seems like. I think they're already a Super Bowl team, so that's why I'm not hopping on this train.
I agree with you. Their only real weaknesses are you going to go with Jimmy Garoppolo, who, I mean, he helped get you to a Super Bowl on the back of that defensive line. That defensive line isn't as deep, but they still have the stars that mattered most. So really, it's like if you can upgrade at quarterback, if you can upgrade at quarterback and maybe Trey Lance starts for you, then maybe you don't need a defensive line that's that deep.
Can I be honest for a second?
Yes, you can.
I will be so mad if Julio Jones goes within the division. Like, I will be legitimately upset. Not because I'm necessarily 100% fearful, but it's because I know they have DK Metcalf. I know they have Tyler Lockett. But why, Pete? Why, John, would you let this happen to you? I would take him away. I would try and go
mess
get him.
Mess up your own cap just to make sure no one else
just
can get him.
Just explode your own cap just so that you don't let the 49ers or the Rams have Julio Jones. Figure it out. Give more extensions. Push it all back towards the end. I don't know, but that is the complete irrational side of me that just would be so incredibly frustrated if Julio Jones ended up in this division.
Can you imagine, to make room, they're like, we gave Dwayne Brown a 10-year deal, a 10-year extension.
Whatever you got to do, get it done. Get it done.
Next hype train. We got a new rivalry in sports between Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka in a video that went viral the other day. So here we go with this hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. Bryson and Brooks, the best rivalry in sports right now.
We did this with the Padres and the Dodgers, right?
We did.
I mean, we're all over. All over these rivalries. It's like Zoolander, right? Hansel, so hot right now. Right
Brooks,
now?
Brooks Koepka, so hot right now.
That's right. Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau, they are hot right now. I am jumping on this train. They are the hottest rivalry in sports. Everybody is talking about them, and they're soaking it all up on Twitter, keeping it going.
I'm going to say they are the hottest rivalry and so hot right now in sports right now. But Mina Kimes of ESPN tweeted the other day, best rivalry in sports might be Madison Square Garden versus Trae Young. And I got to also, it's not a hype train today, but I would board that hype train. DJ.
That was going to be my answer, too. I'm not boarding on the Brooks and Bryson hype train.
You're going Madison
love it.
Square. It's, Knicks fans versus Trae Young.
It has so much Reggie Miller versus New York Knicks, which, by the way, if you have not watched that 30 for 30, I mean, what are you doing? It's a great 30 for 30, but that it has so much. Really, the only thing Trae Young hasn't done is, one, score 8 points in 7 seconds and then have the choke sign. That's the only thing he hasn't done yet. And this is so Reggie Miller versus the Knicks. I love it.
All right, next train. Stephon Diggs wants those 5 Super Bowl rings. We got to play that cut one more time, DJ. Do you have it? Okay, we got to play. Stephon Diggs wants those five Super Bowl rings, and maybe he'll win one this year, because here's the hype train. The Chiefs won't win the AFC in 2021. Now, don't forget what Jake said when told Stephon Diggs would want that. Go ahead, DJ.
But the reality is, go win your first.
I got it.
Just almost dropped an F-bomb. Almost told Stephon Diggs to get the heck out of here with that kind of talk. I actually think that the Chiefs are in for it. I mean, we talk about teams that have a really hard time getting back to the dance after they lose a Super Bowl. People aren't necessarily thinking that way with the Kansas City Chiefs because of all the revamping that they did with that offensive line, but that doesn't guarantee that it's going to end up working out for you. I mean, you're talking about a couple guys that are definitely experiments in terms of how they fit and where they're going to fit into the equation on this for the Chiefs. So I'm actually going to not bore. Or wait. Is it they're not going to win?
The Chiefs are not going to. So basically, anyone but the Chiefs will win the AFC. You boarding?
I am boarding that hype train because I don't think the Chiefs are getting to the Super Bowl this year.
All right. Ooh, I mean, it would be tough 3 years in a row. I think I'm also, just for the sake of how unlikely that is and how difficult it is, not going to do that. I do think they have one of, if not the best roster, though. So it's going to be one of those things where it's just the talent in the AFC on those top teams becomes narrower and narrower, and it starts to be that your only difference maker is Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, it's so tough. It's tough.
Yeah. All right, that'll do it for Hype Train today. And right now, coming up next, you've got questions, we've got answers. Get your questions in right now for What I Need to Know. Here's what you need to do. Any question you have, Seahawks, Mariners, I don't even know what else it would be. Anything it is, text it to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710-710-710. Your questions, we answer them next on What I Need to Know.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get your questions in to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. What I Need to Know, who would win in a foot race, Jake or Gallant? And who would throw a football farther, Stacey or Mora?
Okay, easy.
I was like,
answers.
Why Stacey and Mora? Mora is like built like an athlete. She was like a former model. She's like 5'10". She's just the only other woman. That's why.
These are pretty easy. Gallant would win in a foot race. Yeah. He still tries to challenge people to foot races for some
reason.
Which is a little bizarre. I guess I'm not as in practice, but I think Gallant has always been faster than me. So that's okay. That's fine. And then who would throw a football farther? It would be Mora. No,
why not
question.
Between like me and Clayton? Like, why not give me a little bit of an advantage
okay,
here? A little bit of an
answer.
Edge. Yeah. I don't want to go against Mora. She's like strong and capable.
I don't know what the professor's dealing with. Maybe he could throw a football farther than
I don't
Stacey.
Think you're, he could throw.
You're throwing,
I think
you're
I could throw a football
form?
Fast. Come on.
Your throwing form is horrendous.
Okay.
Like, it's not even,
first of all,
it's not
Jake,
even like,
that's not even true a little bit. What do you know about throwing form? And secondly, I think I could throw a football farther than John Clayton at least. At least John Clayton.
I would sure hope so. But I'm just saying, your technique makes me question it. Like, I'm not even being mean right now.
Wow.
It's just, I don't even know what to do when I watch you throw a football.
I remember, you guys, you think he's kidding. He's not. He's being very serious. Jake was trying to teach me and Curtis, like, technique, and we were throwing in the control room, and I was like, you pick up the ball like you're answering a phone, and then you just kind of throw it, and I thought he would throw up. I thought he would be, anyways. All right.
Yeah, it's not good.
If you have to choose between one of these, I'm assuming, from the 253, would Julio, Sherman, or Wright catapult the Hawks to a Super Bowl? Ooh, I'm going to go with Julio. But I will say, I'm surprised that Wright is still available in free agency. Like, he was a solid
yes.
linebacker last
yes.
year and is a starting caliber linebacker.
Well, the market's not being kind to anybody that's over 30, right? And when you don't play a premier position, like Carlos Dunlap plays a premier position at defensive end. Kerry Hyder Jr., Benson Mayo, they play premier positions even if they aren't necessarily considered some of the best. KJ Wright, Sam linebacker, outside linebacker right now, not necessarily a premier position. So unless you're willing to play for not necessarily veteran minimum, but just a little bit above that, you're not going to get a whole lot of takers right now in this current market. And that's just the unfortunate reality for somebody like KJ Wright. And KJ sitting there going, heck with that. I'm a great player. I'm still one of the best linebackers in the NFL. I shouldn't have to take a massive pay cut like this. So I hope it works out for KJ. I would love to see him here in Seattle, obviously. But in terms of that question, it's not even close. Julio Jones still has the most potential out of those two guys, would have the biggest impact on this roster if he was here. No doubt about it.
From the 253, at Jake, just you.
Besides just
Shane,
me?
Just you, apparently. Besides Shane Waldron, what is the best move the Seahawks made to be a contender this season?
I would say that the best move that they have made thus far would be getting Gabe Jackson. That to me was the best move that they made, and they needed to make that happen, obviously, with the climate of what was going on in the offseason, the frustration or the dissatisfaction that Russell Wilson had voiced. And if you're going to take that seriously and want to change your offensive line play against the best pass-rushing division in football, yeah, you needed to add Gabe Jackson and not just try and go with a Mike Iupati-like type of player at the end of their career.
From the 360, what I need to know, have either of you ever lived rent-free in somebody's head?
I would say that I have lived rent-free in UW fans' heads for 10-plus years, because you still get people that give me crap all the time about not going there. And it's like, it was 10 years ago. Like, let it go.
Yeah.
You were 0-12 at the time.
Move on.
UW, like, think about this. UW was my dream school. You finished in my top two, and it didn't deserve to be there. It was 0-12. 0-12. And I still gave every opportunity to convince me to go there, and it wasn't the right situation. I'm sorry. Made that decision when I was 19 years old.
Also, maybe it's just you know, I don't know why you would still be mad about something that, like, a teenager decided about which school to go to that much longer. And I say this as someone who went to UW and who went through that horrible winless season. I want you to know, sat through that season, watched every single game. I think that I'm living rent-free. I'll say this. For a while, I would get bothered by really mean tweets and texts about, like, you don't know football, you're stupid, blah, 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 I hate you. And it was always by people that were like, you're a girl, get off air. And then I realized, like, oh, I actually put a lot of work into this job, and if you don't like me and I'm not for you, that's fine. I'm not for you. Totally fair. You're prerogative. But I'm not staying up late, like, at night and, like, going to find your tweets and writing nasty things on them because I don't care about you. So I think I'm very honestly living rent-free in the heads of some people who just hate hearing a woman's voice on sports radio. And you know what? It's nice living rent-free. Spend that disposable income on some other stuff for myself. So thanks.
That's right.
Thanks for that. Nice situation. let's see. Oh, I loved this one. Okay. So what I need to know. You can choose to move one great Seattle sports moment, or excuse me, one bad Seattle sports moment from bad to good, but you have to sacrifice moving another great Seattle sports moment from good to bad, if that makes sense. So you got to switch. So for instance, I'll explain it. I, like many people, would love to see a different ending to Super Bowl 49. What am I willing to sacrifice that's a great Seattle sports moment? Now, it can't have been the NFC Championship because you had to win that to get to the Super Bowl. So it can't be anything that would have led to that. So I was thinking, what are some good moments? Beastquake, iconic moment. I hate to say this. I'd be willing to surrender that moment if it meant another Super Bowl.
Okay.
I know that's betrayal.
The Beastquake?
Yeah.
That's a special moment.
It's tough.
That's tough.
I'm still debating it.
Man, okay. I know I would trade this situation. Having the Sonics leave town, I would
Say it.
The Sonics leaving town, I would give up the entire Mariners 2001 season.
Okay.
That's what I would give up.
All right.
I would give up that in return because that was special. That was monumental. That was such a fun year. And the reason why I think that's a big thing to give up is because I have incredibly fond memories of that year, you know, with my family and going to the games and all. It was incredible atmosphere at the ballpark. That was a fun ride. But yes, I would absolutely give up that year for the Sonics to be able to still be here in Seattle.
All right, that'll do it for us today. He is Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. Jake, you're back in studio tomorrow, right?
I am.
Nice.
I am. There whether you like it or not, I'm
it's
coming.
It's going to be a fun Friday. We're going to have a blast. But guess what? Do not go anywhere. Sports Talk is going to continue. Wyman and Bob coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
But the reality is, go win your first.